We are in Genesis 26. And as far as when this occurred, this would have been about 4,000 years ago. Abraham lived around 2100, 2000 BC. So this 2,000 years before Christ. So we know that back in chapter 25, Rebekah has Jacob and Esau. Isaac's 64 years or 60 years old when they were born. Abraham dies when Jacob and Esau are 15 years old. So chapter 26 takes us to when Isaac is at least 75 years old. And there's a famine in the land again. And Moses writes, this is besides the previous famine that occurred in the days of Abraham. And that famine took place in chapter 12. And that was the famine where Abram went down to Egypt to live there. And so Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. Now, he goes to Gerar per the instructions of the Lord. And we know that because verse 2 pretty much comes right out and says it. He says, do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land of which I shall tell you. So God is the one who tells Isaac, go to Gerar. And I'm going to show you, I'm going to bring up a map and give you an idea where these places are. Okay, so Gerar, Isaac is living down here in Beer Lahai Royi. And so here's the Dead Sea. This is quite a bit south of the Dead Sea. It's in the Negev. It's a barren wasteland. It's desert. And so he's living down here. He likes it hot and dry. And there's a famine, which I don't know how do you tell there's a famine if you're living in the desert, but apparently you could. And so God tells him, I want you to go to Gerar. And Gerar is up here in Philistine territory. It's almost on the Mediterranean coast. And there was fertility in Gerar, and God sends him up there. And in chapters 20 and 21, Abraham also went to Gerar. So there's some interesting parallels between Abraham in Gerar and Isaac in Gerar. And you're going to come across the guy named Abimelech. And Abimelech is a title. It's not the name of the king of the Philistines. Just like Pharaoh is not the name of the king of Egypt, it's his title. So Abimelech is a title, and Isaac goes to Abimelech, and Abimelech means father king or father of the king. And in the Old Testament, there are actually three Abimelechs. There's the Abimelech in the days of Abraham before Isaac is born. There's this Abimelech during the days of Isaac, and he's at least 75 years old. And then there's another Abimelech in the days of David, which is about 1,000 years after Abraham. So it's a title. It's not their name. And you're going to encounter another guy toward the end of this chapter, Phicol. That's also a title. So the Lord appears to Isaac and tells him, don't go down to Egypt. I want you to stay in the land of which I tell you. Now, Abraham in chapter 12 went down to Egypt during that famine. And the fact of the matter is God didn't provide any instructions to Abraham one way or the other. He didn't say anything. So Abraham just packed up, went down to Egypt. When the famine's over, he came back. Here, God is telling Isaac specifically, do not go down to Egypt. You stay in the land that I'm going to show you. Sojourn in this land. And verses 3 and 4 is a reiteration of the Abrahamic covenant. This is one of the times where God reiterates his covenant to Abraham, this time to Isaac. Later on, he's going to do it to Jacob. So I want you to notice how many I wills there are here. So he says, I will be with you and I will bless you. And you're going to see that repeated later on in verse 12. The Lord blessed him. Verse 24, I'm with you. I will bless you. He says it to Abraham in chapter 12 and chapter 22, chapter 24. I will bless you. I will greatly bless you. Isaac is going to repeat it to Jacob. God is going to tell it to Jacob. Again, I'm going to be with you when Jacob flees from Esau and heads up north to Laban in Haran. God promises, I'm with you. I'm going to keep you. He tells him after his 20 years in Haran, go back to the land of your fathers. I'm with you. And he blessed him. And so he keeps on repeating these statements from the Abrahamic covenant, that he reiterates them to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. The Lord is with Joseph when Joseph was sold as a slave. So I'm going to be with you. I'm going to bless you. And then he says to you and your descendants, I will give all these lands. And he actually says it twice, once in verse 3 and once in verse 4. That land promise was a very important part of the Abrahamic covenant. And the beginning of Deuteronomy 30, you get another statement. We call it the Palestinian covenant. And so the Abrahamic covenant is actually kind of broken apart. In Deuteronomy 30, you've got the Palestinian covenant, which is the land portion. In 2 Samuel 7, you've got the Davidic covenant, which is the kings are going to come from you. And then in Jeremiah 31, you've got the new covenant, which is in you, all the families of the earth are going to be blessed, and I'm going to write my laws on your heart. So the Abrahamic covenant, you know, splits off into several other unconditional covenants as well. So he promises Isaac, to you and to your descendants, I'm going to give these lands just like I promised it to Abraham. And later on, when Jacob hightails it away from Esau, he says the same thing. The land on which you lie, I'm going to give it to you and to your descendants. And he repeats that again in chapter 35. So this land element is very important. And he says, I'm going to establish the oath which I swore to Abraham. And the oath that he swore was in chapter 22 after Abraham sacrificed Isaac and God stopped him. God said in 22:16, by myself, I have sworn. That's the oath he's talking about here. I've sworn by myself because there's no one greater to swear by. Because you've done this, I'm going to greatly bless you. I'm going to greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and the sand that is on the seashore. Your seed is going to possess the gate of the enemy, your enemies, and in your seed, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. I've sworn it. And so he reiterates that to Isaac. And then he says, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. And he talks about to Abraham, I'll make your descendants like the dust of the earth. I'm going to make your descendants like the stars of heaven, like the sand is on the seashore. In other words, your descendants are going to be innumerable. Says again the same thing to Jacob in chapters 28 and 32. I'm going to make your descendants like the dust and like the sand. And I'm going to give your descendants all these lands. There's the second time. And by your descendants, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. So that also is an important element in the Abrahamic covenant. He said it to Abraham in chapter 12. In you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. In chapter 18, he says it. All the nations of the earth will be blessed. In chapter 22, he says it. In your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Now he's saying it again to Isaac. And in chapter 28, he's going to say it to Jacob. And you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So you've got these I am with you portions. You've got the multiplication of the descendants, the land element, the blessings on all the families of the earth. All of these are Abrahamic covenant reiterations. And he says in verse 5, the reason I'm doing this is because Abraham obeyed me. And he obeyed actually in doing two things. He obeyed when God told him to go forth from his land and from his relatives. Abraham obeyed it. Hebrews 11:8 says this, by faith, when he was called, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place he was to receive for an inheritance. And then when God tested him and told him to offer his only son, Isaac, he obeyed. And he says that in Genesis 22:18, because you have obeyed my voice. And he kept his charge, his commandments, his statutes, and his laws. And I think that would go back to the whole circumcision thing. The moment God told Abraham to be circumcised and circumcise his all of his descendants, he did it. And he was not a young man when he got circumcised. So Isaac packs up everybody, moves to Gerar, and that's where Abraham was decades earlier, and Jacob is with him, Esau's with him, the entire company of servants is with him, the entire encampment packs up and moves to the north-northwest and pitches the tent in Gerar. And so verse 7, when the men of the place asked about his wife, he said, she's my sister. Like father, like son. Abraham did it when he was in Egypt in chapter 12. Abraham does it in Gerar, again in chapter 20. But with Abraham, there was an element of truth there. She really was his sister, half-sister, but still his sister. With Isaac, it's a blatant lie. She's not his sister. And he says, he was afraid to say my wife, thinking the men of the place might kill me on account of Rebecca. She's beautiful. And you know, he's making the same assumptions that his father made. In chapter 20, Abraham, he's thinking to himself, there's no fear of God in this place. These people are godless, ungodly Philistines. there's no sense of decency or morality with these pagans. They're gonna see my beautiful wife. They're gonna kill me on account of her, and then they're gonna take her. So I'm gonna say she's my sister, and I'll save my skin. So Abimelech, I just lost my place. Verse 8. So after they'd been there a long time, and we're not told how long they were there, but long enough for people to get to know them. And they're sitting, you know, in the garden or maybe by the fountain in the city center or someplace. And Abimelech happens to look out the window, and there he sees Isaac caressing Rebecca. And he's probably stopped for a moment and thought to himself and said, wait a minute, isn't she supposed to be his sister? And light bulb goes on, she's not his sister. So he calls Isaac in. Behold, certainly she is your wife. How did you say she's my sister? I think in Abimelech's mind, you lied to me. People don't go caressing their sisters. Even us Philistines don't do that. She's your wife. And so Isaac admits it. I thought I was going to die on account of her. I mean, you're Philistines. You're a bunch of pagans. There can't possibly be any decency or morality with you people. I thought I was going to die. And Abimelech says, well, how could you do this? One of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt to us. And that statement right there, that admission, kind of reinforced Isaac's assumption. Here's a bunch of godless, ungodly, immoral Philistines. And now the king is saying, well, one of the people might easily have lain with her. Well, okay, that kind of is what I was afraid of. You know, you sort of just reinforce the idea that there isn't much decency or morality with you people, but you would have brought guilt on us, defiling another man's wife. And in chapter 20, God actually prevented that from happening. In fact, God comes to the other Abimelech in a dream, and he says, you're a dead man, because the woman that you've taken, she's married. And so the other Abimelech, he goes pleading his case with God, and God says, yeah, I know. And that's why I kept you from sinning against me. I didn't let you touch her. But if you don't let her go, if you don't restore her to her husband, you're going to die. So this Abimelech, calls all the people together, and he says, if anyone touches this man or his wife, he's going to be put to death. So he lets Isaac and Rebecca stay there and warns his people, do not touch this man or his wife, or you're going to die. So Isaac sowed in the land, and he didn't leave the Philistines. He stayed in that area. He stayed in the area of Gerar, primarily because that's where God had told him to stay. God hadn't said, okay, it's time to leave. He stays in that area. And so he sows in the land, and that same year he reaped 100-fold. So even though there was famine in the land of Canaan, the adjacent territory in Philistia was fertile, and it could produce abundant crops. What one of the things here, to the west of us, we've got the what we call the Front Range of the Rockies. And in order to go from my house to Missoula, I have to go over this pass. It's called Rogers Pass. On this side of the pass, there's basically no trees. It's kind of a high desert, high plains, very arid, very dry. You get to the top of the pass on the other side, plush forests, green. On our side of the pass, it's, you know, in the 50s, 60s, no snow. Get to the top of the pass to the other side, it's in the 20s and 30s and snow everywhere. And that's kind of what's going on here. You've got this divide. They're closer to the ocean. They've got the moisture coming in from the ocean, and the area is fertile. The farther inland you get, it's dry, it's barren, it's desolate, it's a desert. So he's staying in that area. He's sowing, he's reaping. And it says, end of verse 12, the Lord blessed him. And he became rich. Now, keep in mind, Isaac started out with incredible wealth. He inherited it from his father, Abraham. Back in 25, it says Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. And remember, Abraham had hundreds of servants who took care of thousands of flocks. He had wealth that he didn't know what to do with. And Isaac inherited that wealth. And now he's becoming richer. In fact, Moses writes in verse 13, he continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. So he grew richer and richer, became very wealthy. He, in addition to everything he had inherited from Abraham, God's given him even more flocks and more herds and more servants, so that the Philistines started to envy him. Even the king of the Philistines envied him. So Isaac had more servants, more wealth than even the king of the Philistines. So verse 15, all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, the Philistines stopped up by filling them with earth. The only well we know of by name in the days of Abraham was Beersheba, but he had dug other wells, and the Philistines come along and fill them up. And in their mind, one surefire way to get rid of someone living in your territory is to take away their only fresh source of fresh water. You fill up the wells with rock and dirt, they're going to leave. Hezekiah in 2 Chronicles 32 basically did that to Sennacherib. And so Abimelech says, go away from us. You're too powerful for us. And I think in Abimelech's mind, he's probably saying, you're too powerful for me. You've got more wealth than I do. You've got more servants than I do. And Abraham's servants were trained in war. We knew that from chapter 14. So Isaac's got his own private little army that are warriors. And Abimelech, yeah, you're too powerful for us. Go away. Later on, the Egyptians in Exodus chapter 1 feel the same way about the sons of Israel. They're more and mightier than we are. But the Egyptians were shrewd. They enslaved Israel instead of sending them away. So Isaac packs up and departs and camps in the valley of Gerar. And so if you look at this map, Isaac is moving sort of in back in the direction from which he came. So he came from Beer Lahairoi and headed north-northwest. Now he's heading south-southeast. He's heading back. And as he's going, he's digging wells. He's digging new wells. He's redigging wells that Abraham had built. So verse 18, Isaac dug again the wells of water which had been dug in the days of Abraham, his father. And the middle of that verse shows you how stupid and short-sighted the Philistines were. The Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. Why would anyone in their right mind stop up a well that was dug by another person who's now dead? Abraham's dead. Isaac's not even living there. Why would you stop up a well? You're in a desert region. Fresh water is incredibly scarce. Digging a well is difficult, time-consuming, and you're not even sure you're going to get water once you've dug a hole in the ground. I mean, these Philistines really didn't think this one through. So Isaac goes back and finds these areas where the wells used to be, and Isaac would know where they were because he had grown up with these wells. And so he redid, actually his servants redug the wells, and Isaac gives them the same names that his father had given them. And verse 19, Isaac's servants dug in the valley. They found there a well of flowing water, and the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with the herdsmen of Isaac. So Isaac's dug this well, and it would appear that this well and the wells mentioned in verses 21 and 22 are wells that were dug by Isaac's servants. They weren't wells that were redug. So in addition to the ones they redug from the days of Abraham, they also dug new wells. And this would be one of those new wells. And the herdsmen of Gerar, they're following Isaac. And so they dig this well. The herdsmen of Gerar come along. The water's ours. So the herdsmen of Gerar, they're quarreling with Isaac's herdsmen. They're claiming the water rights. They're declaring, this water is ours. You can't have it. So Isaac names the well Essek, which means contention. And so now, if you look at a map, there's Gerar. Now they're down here. This is where the well Essek is. And so Isaac, you know, he just doesn't want to get into it with these guys. So he moves on, keeps on heading south, southwest. They dug another well. And the herdsmen of Gerar, they're not content staying by Essek. They just keep on following Isaac. I mean, they've got this entire territory, but no, they have to follow Isaac. And so they dug another well, they quarrel over it, they claim the water rights, they declare the water's ours. And so Isaac names it Sitna, which means strife. So he kind of throws up his arms in disgust and moves on. And he keeps on following, going south, southwest. And he moved away from there and dug another well. And oh, look, they didn't quarrel over it. Apparently the herdsmen of Gerar, now they're down in Rehoboth. That's a little too far from home. We'll let them have this one. So he names it Rehoboth, which means broad places. At last, the Lord has made room for us, and we will be fruitful in the land. So God has opened up this territory for us. We're in these broad places. We're going to name it Rehoboth. But he doesn't stay there. From Rehoboth, they went to Beersheba. So now they just keep on heading south. And this was where Abraham had dug a well earlier, and this was also where Abraham lived after God had told him to sacrifice Isaac. So from sacrificing Isaac, they came and moved down to Beersheba. And that night, God appears to him. And again, he is reiterating portions of the Abrahamic covenant. And he begins by saying, I'm the God of your father, Abraham. I was your father's God, I'm your God. Do not fear. I'm with you. I think Isaac, you know, he's been chased by the Philistines from Gerar, driven out of their territory. And he was probably a bit fearful. Maybe they're going to come back. Maybe they're not satisfied. They're going to raid my camp in the middle of the night. And God tells him, don't fear. I'm with you. Don't worry about it. Back in verse 3, sojourn in this land, I'll be with you. Promises the same thing to Jacob. I'm going to be with you wherever you go. Spend the 20 years, spend however long you need to with Laban, I'm going to be with you. After that time is up, go back home. I'm going to be with you. Joseph in Genesis 39, twice the Lord was with Joseph. So I'm going to be with you. I'm going to bless you. Again, a reiteration of the covenant. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to multiply your descendants. Even though you've only got two sons, their descendants are going to be innumerable. So as far as Abraham was concerned, he only had one son of the covenant, but he had multiple other descendants. Isaac, he's only got two sons. And they're going to multiply and become an innumerable multitude. God promises him that. Back in verse 4, as the stars of heaven. And I'm going to do this for the sake of my servant Abraham. Because he obeyed me, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless your descendants. I'm going to be with you for his sake. So he built an altar there. And usually that's, you know, what happens when the Lord appears, they build an altar. So he built an altar, called on the name of the Lord. He pitched his tents there, and his servants dug a well. So they're basically redigging the well that the Philistines had stopped up. And they're not going to get to water until verse 32. So they're in the process of digging this well. Isaac's pitched his tent there. This is going to be their new place of residence. Earlier, he was much farther south in Beer Lahairoi. Now he's north of that in Beersheba. This is where he's going to stay. It's nicer up here. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Abimelech comes along. So Isaac is down here in Beersheba. Abimelech makes the trek all the way from Gerar, kind of walking past all the wells that his herdsmen had stolen. And Abimelech comes, and his advisor, his personal advisor, Ahuzath, and Phicol, the commander of his army. And Phicol, like Abimelech, is most likely a title rather than a name. And the reason we say that is because there was another guy named Phicol that came with another Abimelech back in chapter 21. So it would seem highly unlikely that two guys with the exact same names come 75 years apart. So they're probably titles, Philistine titles. And Abimelech and Phicol and Ahuzath, his personal advisor, They come to Isaac. They want to make a treaty, just like the other Abimelech and Phicol did in the days of Abraham. They want to make a treaty. And the reason they want to make a treaty is because they recognize God is with these guys. These guys are powerful. We don't want these people as our enemies. So Isaac, before they even get a chance, why have you come to me? You hate me. You sent me away from you. Well, yeah, they did send him away. And, you know, they said, go away from us. You're too powerful. And this idea of hatred and animosity comes from the Philistine stopping up his father's wells and quarreling with him and claiming the water rights. We're not sure that Abimelech actually instigated that, but Isaac jumps to that conclusion. And so they say, we plainly see that the Lord's been with you. And they knew that before. They knew back earlier that God was the one who blessed him with a hundredfold crop. God was the one who continually caused him to grow richer and become wealthy and more possessions of flocks and herds and household. And yeah, we know that God's been with you. And you're a powerful man. In fact, you're more powerful than we are. So we said, let there be an oath between us. And let's make a covenant that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have done nothing but good to you, which isn't altogether true. And we've sent you away in peace, again, not altogether true. But Abimelech and Phicol realized if Isaac had wanted to, he's got his own trained little army here. These guys could do a serious harm. You know, think of what Jacob's two sons did to the Shechemites. Two sons killed every male in the city of Shechem. And Isaac's got his own personal little army here. He could easily wipe out the entire population of Gerar. So Phicol and Abimelech, yeah, we don't want to be enemies. We want to make a covenant. You do us no harm, just as we haven't done you any harm, sort of. So they said, you are now the blessed of the Lord. And I think maybe Abimelech is kind of intimating that Abraham was the blessed of the Lord, and now you, his son, have taken his place. You're now the blessed of the Lord. So Isaac made a feast. They ate and drank. At this point, they haven't come into any agreement. So they're sitting around the dinner table and feasting and drinking and probably hashing out the terms of the covenant. And this is probably where Ahuzath, the personal advisor, comes in, you know, whispering in the king's ears, you really should ask for this. And, you know, how about this? And Isaac is chatting with them, hashing out these terms. In the morning, after everything's been worked out, they rose early and exchanged oaths. Now, what I find interesting is the wording of that. Here, it simply says they exchanged oaths. In the treaty that the other Abimelech made with Abraham, it says Abraham swore it. In fact, the Abimelech made him swear to the oath. Here they just kind of exchange it. Yeah, I'll do this, and they shake hands. Abraham had to swear an oath. So slightly different. This is a bit weaker. And then Isaac sends them away. They departed in peace. And that same day, the well that they had started digging back in verse 25, they finally hit water. Isaac's servants come in. We found water. So he named it Sheba. And Sheba means an oath. So Isaac and Abraham both pledged oaths at this same location. And so both of them named that well Beer Sheba, well of an oath. And Isaac gave it the same name as his father when he made the oath with the other Abimelech. Now, the end of chapter 26, beginning in verse 34, kind of digresses, total change of topic. Esau's 40 years old. And Esau and Jacob, same age, so Jacob's 40 years old. Isaac at this point would be 100 years old. And the age difference between what takes place here in 26 and what takes place in 27 is 37 years. So Esau and Jacob are 40 at the end of 26, Isaac's 100. In chapter 27, Isaac would be 137, and Jacob and Esau would be 77. So when Jacob acquired the blessing, he was 77 years old, and he still doesn't have a wife. So kind of that just makes it really weird in 27 and 28. Here's Isaac, 137 years old, sending a 77-year-old son off to his mother's brother to acquire wives from his daughters. And like, okay, that's just weird. So Esau married Judith, the daughter of Beeri, and the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. So, and keep in mind, the Hittites were actually a subgroup of Canaanites. So if you go back to Genesis 10, you'll find that Canaan was the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and then Heth, and Heth would be the father of the Hittites. And so Esau marries two Hittite women, and we know that they're not the only wives of Esau. Later on in chapter 28, he marries another woman, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael. And then in chapter 26, he marries Ada, the daughter of Elon, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, and Basemath, Ishmael's daughter. Now, those four names, Mahalath, Ada, Aholibamah, and Basemath, if you look at this table I've got here, we know that these two are completely different. So Judith is a Hittite, Aholibamah is a Hivite. But these other two, Basemath and Ada, they're both the daughter of Elon. They're both Hittites. And some commentaries say that they're the same person with different names, which really was not uncommon. You see that a lot in the Old Testament. For example, Uzziah, the king, his other name was Azariah. So it wouldn't be uncommon for them to have same person, different names, or they were sisters. Same thing with Mahalath and Basemath, both daughters of Ishmael, both Ishmaelites. Could they be same person, different names, or are they sisters? My opinion, they're sisters. So at this point in Genesis, Esau marries two women. Later on, he marries four more. And two of these two groups are actually going to be sisters. And at the end of the chapter, they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. So Esau's choice to marry Hittite women rather than members of his own extended family, that brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah, as well as their pagan religious practices. I mean, these are Canaanites. These are idol worshipers. They weren't worshipers of the one true God. And so Esau would have picked up their pagan religious practices. And that was something that God warned the Jews about. Do not marry the people of the land, because they're going to lead you astray after their gods. And that's probably exactly what's happening with Esau. Isaac and Rebekah see it, and they're grieved over it. And so in chapter 28, Rebekah comes up with this scheme. I know how to get Jacob away from his brother Esau so Esau doesn't kill him. I'll just play on what is going through Isaac's mind, you know, how Isaac was not allowed to take a Canaanite wife. He had to go to, you know, his father's relatives. I'll do the same thing with Jacob. I'll send Jacob, I'll convince Isaac to send Jacob to our relatives to get a wife so that he doesn't marry the Canaanites. And that's a perfect excuse to get him away from Esau so Esau doesn't kill him. And it actually worked out really well. A little bit deceptive, but coming from this family, I would expect nothing less. Anyway, next time we will look at chapter 27. And we always call this, you know, chapter the stolen blessing and whatnot. Fact of the matter is, Jacob didn't steal anything. The blessing was already his. He just needed to claim it. And instead, he listens to his mother, who works out this whole deceitful scheme, and he goes right along with it. So next time we'll do that. Any questions?
Jeff, you covered it pretty well, very thoroughly, so evidently no questions.
Or I thoroughly confused everybody.